You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Hello, everybody. You are here with Rosalie Contrite. And you are listening to the podcast, This Catholic Life. I am your host, Rosalie Contrite, of the Contrite Catholic blog at contritecatholic.com. I am a former militant atheist, turned contrite Catholic. And we won't be getting into my story today, but I had a dream of starting a podcast. So you know what I did? I did it. No, I'm just kidding. I am not a professional. I have no formal training. I am literally doing this at my kitchen table because I really felt that young Catholic women did not have a podcast. And I really wanted to do that, so I got together with some of my very best Catholic friends that have other blogs or are speakers or even just people that have great stories, and we are going to talk about different controversial topics. There's going to be no shouting. What we really, really want to do is to discuss topics in a meaningful way where you can hear both sides of an issue that is not clearly defined by Catholic teaching. So this should be interesting. We'll see. I definitely want everybody to send feedback. You could send feedback, suggestions, critiques, whatever you like to contrite.catholic@gmail.com. The show is going to have a couple different segments, and I want to explain those to you. So we are going to have punny titles that relate to Catholicism. So we will have what is known as the Synod, and that will be when I speak with a guest, and we will discuss a topic, maybe bikinis and modesty, or dating before an annulment, or I tell you, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but we Catholics have a lot to argue about. And so that is what will be happening in the Synod. We will also have a what is called the Tribunal, and it will be a review of a Catholic product, book, or media. So it could be a movie, something like the Spotlight movie, perhaps a new Catholic book. Could be by a priest, could be by a lay person, but we will probably only be reviewing Orthodox books unless they are so big that debunking is called for. And lastly, we will have a segment called the Responsorial. I'm nerdy. And during this, I will read listener feedback. I want to hear from everybody in listener land. And we will discuss dialogues that we, and when I say we, I and the guest, or just myself and my other personality, that we have with people who write into us. Because I just really want this to be an ongoing dialogue of meaningful Catholic topics. And I want it to be real. I am not going to sit here and pretend that faith is all flowery and easy, because let me tell you, coming from an atheist background, it is not easy. A lot of people think you're nuts. A lot of people push back. Even the people dearest to you do not understand, and you're seen as a bit of a cuckoo. So I get it, especially since I was leading a very different life prior to my conversion. So anyhow, that is what the show is going to look like week to week. I have a little synod taped so that I will tag these together and you can listen to that one. It is on redemptive suffering, and it is with Layla Miller of the Little Catholic Bubble blog. You can also find her on Twitter at Catholic Bubble. Yeah, it's just Catholic Bubble. I'm so smart. So anyways, I'm so hopeful. Please write me at contrite.catholic@gmail.com. And I look forward to growing this with you and getting to know you, and for you getting to know me, Rosalie Contrite. All right. Pax vobiscum.
All right, we're back, and I am with my guest, Layla Miller. She's the author of the fantastic Catholic blog, Little Catholic Bubble. She is the mother of 8 children, 3 grandchildren, and I have so much respect for this woman. I am such a stickler for canon law, and I'm super dogmatic, but if Layla disagrees with me, I will seriously look at my opinion and question it. So, framing it that way, she is here to talk about redemptive suffering. And I will just let her take that away because everything she says is amazing.
Well, hi, Rosalie. Gosh, I don't have much to live up to, but thanks for that. Yes, redemptive suffering. My goodness, this subject is near and dear to my heart. So many people, and I think I want to say it's the Western world. I don't know that people probably in the poorer countries who are very, very close to the earth, very close to just death itself and always trying to find where their next meal might be coming from, people who are in war-torn situations, poverty, famine, I don't think that they struggle as much with the idea that life has to be comfortable all the time. And so suffering is kind of more their lot and something that they're able to assimilate into their lives and become, I think they're like Mother Teresa said, they don't have the spiritual poverty that we have in the West, where we have just so much material wealth and everything we do seems to be about making things convenient, making things comfortable, and forgetting our end, and our end is death. So everything that we try is somehow to mitigate or cheat death, suffering, and discomfort. The people who are in different countries, and my dad grew up in the third world and immigrated when he was a young man, but death is all around them. Suffering is all around them. Strangely enough, people have noted that if you go to those countries and you see the kids kind of in the streets and wearing the rags, and a lot of times they're a lot happier than perhaps the kids you see around here. And it seems counterintuitive, but I don't think it is. And so I guess it's a subject that just kind of comes up in my mind a lot when anything seems to go against our will or against what we think it should here, because we're so used to control and we're so used to having material things and money and things that can get fixed. We don't see our children die on a regular basis in front of our eyes, all the things that other people throughout mankind have seen. And so I just think America and the Western world, which I absolutely love, by the way, I'm like the biggest patriot in the world, but we just have this thing about not wanting to suffer, and we don't think it has any meaning. And I think that Catholicism is the one entity, the one religion, even over and above Protestantism, which actually gives suffering meaning, because Christ gave it meaning. And it's funny because I've taught converts over the years in RCIA and elsewhere. The big question everybody has is, why are we here and why does it hurt so much? Like, everybody seems to be in some kind of pain. And when you teach people about redemptive suffering, that suffering actually has a meaning, and it's a really powerful, amazing meaning, things start to fall into place for them. And there's a lot of gratitude in knowing that suffering has meaning and it's not just wasted or something just to be strictly avoided and despised. And so I just think it's the best kept secret in the church and the best kept secret in the world is the idea of redemptive suffering, which we could go into and I could explain more about if you'd like. But
that's a really beautiful way, I think, of parsing it out. And there's two main things I wanted to touch back on. And that is the statement that you made about children in war-torn countries, third world countries. I was able to go to Bosnia Herzegovina, and there were children often without complete clothing. They were very obviously starving. So happy. They were so happy. And I almost felt confused by their happiness.
And then I juxtapose that against myself when I was an atheist and going out with my friends. You know, we would drink as much as we wanted. We would do whatever we wanted. I lived with my boyfriend, all these things. I did everything I wanted. And it was all so that I wouldn't have to suffer. I wouldn't have to wait. All for comfort. And yet I was miserable, way more miserable than these kids in these countries that I was seeing.
Right. Kids who have nothing. My dad, half of his childhood was spent in Egypt, and he was there as a refugee from another country. And I went back once with him, and he's been back several times. And these kids, I'm telling you, they are in bare feet in the dirt in the streets, and they are laughing and smiling, and they don't have, you know, two coins to rub together, and they have a peace that our, I think, American kids and American families, I think, just don't have. And you do have to wonder that. That's an observation a lot of people have made. I mean, it's not just you and I have said these things. It's a pretty common observation. So the whole, to me, it speaks of, again, the materialism and again, I like my creature comforts. I really, really, really do. I love being an American. But suffering comes to everyone. It will come to us. It will find us. Eventually, death will find us. And we cannot live our lives as if we can insulate ourselves from all suffering. Because what happens is everybody wants to do that. And then when suffering does come, or sickness or death or loss, people either try to self-medicate so they don't feel that pain. They don't have that, you know, they numb the pain, or they, you know, they fight against it, or they rage against God. How dare he allow me to suffer? And I don't know. We just don't really handle our suffering well here, because I don't think we know what it's for and what to do with it, or why it's even necessary for a human being. But again, we're not as close. When you are that close to not knowing where your next meal is, or, you know, you're just mostly worried about how you're going to survive, you know God better than the people who don't ever have to think about God, because we're so taken care of. You know, we've got our next meals for the next all the years of our lives. And we have hospitals and medications and things that we can take for every illness and every headache. And so what we have forgotten is how to suffer and how to suffer well. And we don't think it's a requisite anymore, but it is. And Christ, you know, we got the prosperity gospel people, a lot of the Protestant denominations too, they just really believe in this health and wealth gospel where, oh, just, you know, just love God and kind of do whatever this particular preacher says, and you will be healthy and wealthy. And if you suffer, darn it, you're not trying hard enough. And that's exactly the opposite of what Jesus said. So it's kind of scary that people who are supposedly kind of Bible only, or really looking at their Bibles, they've kind of missed the huge message of Christ, which is you're going to suffer if you're a Christian, let me tell you. And not only are you going to, but I'm telling you to do it. Because if you want to be my follower, you must take up your cross and you must follow me. And I don't think people remember what that means. What does picking up a cross and carrying it actually mean? Well, think about that. We're coming close to Holy Week and doing our Stations of the Cross, but it is not pleasant. So that is what is in store for people who would like to become holy and become like Christ. And what people don't understand is, because we are following the Lord in doing that, in suffering, picking up our cross and offering it back to the Father through Christ, uniting it with his suffering, God the Father looks on that suffering as he looked upon his Son on the cross, because we're members of Christ's body. And if it's offered in union with Christ's cross, guess what? That is what the God the Father looked at on Calvary and used to, he was so pleased with that offering. It was so wonderful, so perfect, that he redeemed the entire world and he opened the gates of heaven because of it. So our suffering united to that suffering has redemptive qualities. And to the extent that we do offer up and carry our crosses with with goodwill, and we accept them and we say, Lord, I can't avoid this suffering. I mean, obviously you don't have to find suffering. It will find you. But if it's unavoidable and you offer it back up in union with Christ's cross, God the Father uses that suffering, uses the grace merited, the same grace that was merited on the cross of Christ, and he applies it as if it's a treasury almost. It's distributed to other souls, to your soul, to the souls of the people you're praying for. If you're a saint, saints didn't need all that extra grace, but they were able to apply it to others, and conversions happen, and it was redemptive. So you're saving souls to the extent that you are offering your suffering in union with Christ's suffering on the cross. And it's so huge. It's such a big part of Christianity. That's kind of what we do. And we don't even know that that's something we're called to. And so we waste the suffering that inevitably comes to us in a fallen world. And so anyway, that's a message that when people hear it, sometimes people who've suffered greatly, everything changes for them. And I've seen miracles happen. It's such a relief. It's a burden off their shoulders that this is something they're doing for Christ, through Christ, with Christ, and it is helping to redeem the world.
I think that's really important what you stress there. It's that suffering finds us all. It's not that we're saying you should go, you know, roll in some broken glass or something. We're saying that, we want to alleviate starvation and people who are in pain, but you can't always. And the joy, the good news is that it's for something. It's not all for naught. That, and the idea that the prosperity gospel, where, you know, if you just pay in and you're good, God will bless you. Well, he said that no one was above the master. And, you know, he was pretty clear with the camel and the eye of the needle and all this stuff. And I just think that we have really, as a Christian whole, not just Protestants, but everybody, really decided that if we're unhappy, if we feel stressed, we should leave our situation. And I think that this is not a good message. What if Christ is like, this cross is really heavy, I'm just going to leave this and you guys deal with this. You know? So I really worry about that. But you could probably talk more on that.
Well, I think it was, I heard it once said that, was it Cardinal, the Cardinal from New York who passed away, Cardinal O'Connor, yes. He said Christ could have saved the world through his miracles, but he chose to save the world through his suffering. And if we understand that as Christians, then we understand the power of suffering in union with Christ. And yeah, we have gotten to the point where we want to throw off our crosses. If something's unavoidable, and I'm totally with you, like there is this, nobody is talking about being masochistic, and very few people in the Christian world are actually called to like self-flagellation or any of that stuff. Some people might have that. They need to be under the spirit, direction of the spiritual director and a superior. And that's not the average Christian by any means. So we don't need to look for further suffering. And also, by the way, just to be very, very clear, yes, we are to alleviate other people's sufferings as best we can. And we can only do so with moral means. We don't want to ever alleviate suffering by using immoral means, because clearly that's against God's will. But we're talking about our own personal suffering, not inflicting it on others and saying, there, good, you're suffering, that's good, you need to suffer more because you need to save the world. No. What does Christ give us? What is our cross? That's the only one we need to be concerned with. And if we can't get out of a cross morally, if it is something that has been clearly put in our path and there's no way around it, that is in any way licit, a licit way around it, then we all need to accept that that is a cross that God has given for whatever reason. And we can speculate all we want, but if we can't get around it and it's there, we accept it and we say, I offer it, Lord. I offer this. And you, this is the secret of the saints, which again, I defy anyone to read the writings of the saints who are in union. You know, they're three stages of holiness, and that's a whole other topic I'd love to talk about sometime. But, you know, the purgative stage when you're just off the mortal sin boat, you know, onto the path, and then into the illuminative stage, which is the second stage, where your peace and joy start to outstrip your fear and anxiety. And then into the third stage, which is union. And that's where the saints were. They reached that on earth. And I defy anyone to look at the writings of the saints and find some kind of prosperity gospel or some kind of, hey, you know what? I couldn't take the suffering anymore. So I just threw it off and decided God doesn't want me to suffer. He wants me to be happy. And so then they went off and, you know, ditched their trials and tribulations. You just won't see that. But what you will see is the great joy and peace that comes to those who are in those final stages of holiness when they do encounter suffering. They are still feeling pain. Believe me, it's not that they are superhuman and that pain goes away, but they find a peace and a joy within that suffering, in the suffering, because they're so close to Christ. And some people will know what this is like even without being necessarily a saint, but I'm sure some people have had the experience of suffering greatly, but in the moments of suffering have found great consolation and even great peace from either other people or, you know, a priest may have ministered to them, or maybe they read something that really touched their hearts. But maybe even for a fleeting moment, you could see how there could be peace in suffering. And that's for most of us who are just way back on the path, like early on the path to holiness. You can still, there are glimpses of that. And then, again, the saints got to the point where they embraced their suffering. It was okay. It was okay because they knew who God was, they knew where they were going, and they knew the value of what they were doing. And so I just kind of look around, and I indict myself as well. Believe me, I get a cold, and I want to, you know, curse the heavens. How dare I'm, you know, my nose is sore. It's all sore, Lord. But, you know, it's all of us. We don't understand the power and the goodness that can come from offered suffering in union with Christ. And we can do something with it that will actually save souls and just help so many people around us, just whatever intention that we have. So I think we've lost that, and there's so much power. And I think that the devil loves that we don't do that. He loves it. The devil is just like, great, like wasted suffering. I think it's fabulous, these people. It's fantastic. Let's keep it. Let's keep this going because they're miserable. And it's a shame. So,
And don't we make ourselves miserable trying to avoid, you know, misery? I swear that that's the fastest way to misery. But yeah. I can't even believe it. We've almost run out our time. So you will definitely have to come back again. Oh my gosh.
Happy to do so. And it was a kind of a, like a really heavy subject today, but yeah, I would be.
I know, right? Way to get right into it.
I know.
We don't mess around here on This Catholic Life. Okay.
No, we don't.
And they don't mess around on Little Catholic Bubble either. So I would urge you to go check that out. And you can get in touch with Layla and pick her brain. She makes herself very available there. All right. Well, that was our show talking with Layla Miller of Little Catholic Bubble on redemptive suffering. And this is your host, Rosalie Contrite of the Contrite Catholic Blog, closing out this podcast. Or the podcast, This Catholic Life. I hope that you've enjoyed the show and that you feel free to write us and that you'll be staying tuned. All right. Keep it Catholic, everybody.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.